FreedomSlips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome, Radio Land.
Hello.
Are we all here?
Yes.
We're all here, but we might not be all there.
All there?
There.
So.
Werewolf.
They're
a castle.
Okay, so we are okay, good. I just got the thumbs up that everybody can be heard. We're trying out the new board. Thanks, Mr. Pat Rabbit, or Punk Rabbit, board. or Pagan Rabbit. I don't think Rabbit is nice.
No, it's Rabbit, right?
Yeah, it is Rabbit, but I kind of sound
Rabbit. Nice.
I don't think he wants to be known as Rabid.
No, I don't think so.
So, anyway, hope everyone is doing well this evening.
Well, as can be expected.
In these trying times.
These trying times, indeed.
So what is going on in these trying times with you guys?
COVID's going down.
COVID is going down.
I can't say that enough times. I'm very happy about that. I can just go away now. Just get off the radar. Just come again no other day, I say.
Right. Right.
Yes.
I'd love to never have to talk about that again. And I think it things a lot of things. So if it goes down, we can maybe get away from this. You know, mandate stuff that's causing people so much pain and angst. Just say, you know? It's pervasive out there. We deal with what we deal with. I'm seeing a number of people actually say that too. There's like some, not just the fringe, you know, people who are, you know, viral researchers and whatnot saying, look, we got a certain amount of people that have the vaccine. not a big amount of people actually got it. Now let's kind of just move on. And that'd be great because of like one less thing to be worried about because we have other things to worry about, like Ukraine.
Yeah.
Is that calming down? Like, I don't know anymore. It seemed like Putin was backing off the border.
It sounded like he was pulling troops back, but that doesn't mean anything because he can still hit them with aircraft and artillery.
He can. So I read a, it was actually pretty cool. There was a blogger I follow on Substack, and he was going through the prediction markets where, you know, people kind of research these events in the world and, you know, kind of make predictions, you know, they bet nominal amounts of money, not like huge amounts. and it, you know, I was kind of wondering, I really didn't understand what does it mean? Russia's going to invade Ukraine. It was along the lines of kind of what happened before. Like there's some target regions that they were going to go after rather than like Kiev and like take over the whole country. And that made it more, to me, understandable. Not understandable, I still think it's the wrong thing for Putin to do. But why he was kind of taking what I think is, it's a much more calculated thing than just some sort of bonkers, I'm taking over Europe. He did it successfully before, and the idea that he'd kind of do it successfully again is, you know, certainly, certainly on the table. And like to your point, still on the table. So, we'll see. I'm interested to see how this plays out. I think it sounds like he's actually getting concessions from Biden, about what Ukraine can and can't do militarily. And I don't know if that's what he was in after all along.
He's getting concessions on to how Ukraine can respond to being attacked by Russia?
Well, he's getting Biden to say things like, you know, Russia's, or well, the Russian people aren't our enemies, how I put it. But yeah, that there's no, thought to, Ukraine being used as a staging point against anything against Russia. Which, I mean, of course it is. that's who Ukraine is most worried about. Like, who else would they think Ukraine's worried about? Like, what, Hungary, Belarus, Turkey? No, they're worried about Russia. So getting the largest country in the world to say, oh, they're not a direct threat, I think that's a concession in and of itself. And I think Putin is playing the long game still.
Yeah. Yeah. How old is Putin, by the way? I mean, how long is it?
60s?
How long is the game?
He's born in 52. He's 69.
Okay. How long of a game can he play? I mean, is there going to be, when he leaves, when he passes away or leaves office, is there someone going to carry the torch for him, you think?
Oh, yeah. I think he's going to have his people. Isn't it Medvedev?
Yeah, right.
That's the prime minister, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, haven't they kind of like
the he's like prime minister?
But right, I mean, haven't they gone back and forth? Right. Like they just like they've always like been in like the reins of power.
Yes.
So yeah, I would see Putin using. I think Putin does want to position Russia more towards a long term global power role. I always think that's been his objective. Yeah, he's the deputy chairman of the Security Council right now, Medvedev. So I would assume he's going to.
Yeah, I always want to just stop at Medved, and then like I have to say something else.
Yeah, right. Medved. Yeah, right.
Yes.
That's all, folks.
Yes. So we'll see. I'm glad we're not getting a shooting war with them.
Not yet.
I don't know that we will. I just don't think so. I do think the impact on global markets would be negative if they went in. We'd see gas prices go up.
Even more. It's up to $3.67.
Yeah, $3.49 when I filled up last, so I could see it top $4 if it went four.
Are we saying that the gas is up in this country because we've kind of, you know, stopped production of oil in this country, and I mean, and oil futures have you know, kind of retaliated accordingly?
Yeah. I don't think I've read on why.
I think they're using any excuse to raise the price of gasoline.
I think that's a big part of it. I think people raise the price on everything, right?
Right.
Right.
So, right. I mean, if bread is going up 6%, I mean, for sure gas is. Gas is considered inelastic, right? Most people are forced
we'll
to
buy it.
The amount of, yeah, right. It's not like, oh, I'm going to get an alternative.
Right.
Right.
You know, you're going to travel what you're going to travel.
I'm going to distill this corn in my kitchen.
And I'll show them. Excellent. Yeah.
I'll show them. That's right.
80 cans of Libby's corn.
Because certainly I don't know how much oil we get from Russia.
So well, it wouldn't be because of Russia, but if you tamp down the world market,
mm-hmm.
the people that were buying oil from Russia, and I think that's mostly like either EU, right? Like Germany's really concerned about this.
Mm-hmm.
I would think so.
They have to buy it on the world market, which means the price goes up. So even if you're not a consumer, if you're consuming even local oil, if the gas company, pardon me, the gas, you know, the petroleum companies, ExxonMobil, Chevron, all them, they're the ones sell us gas. If they can charge money more, or if the price goes up, you know, they'll raise the price. Even here, even if it was all completely domestic. Because they can ship it to people who pay more, so they will.
Yeah, so it's a future market, right? It's not
well.
Really,
the futures are designed to keep prices relatively stable, right? So if you're seeing prices go up, you want to lock in a good price right now. And if you're wrong, you overpaid, but at least you paid the amount of money you know you could afford to not like triple. So that's where the future market is supposed to be doing its job. And then people bet on both sides of it. And the winner, there's a winner and the loser, you know, pays to the winner, basically. But it's supposed to reduce volatility. It's obviously a very volatile market because you've got they actually thought gas was going to come down so much because they thought of this new wave of Omicron, which can, like, destroy travel. It really hasn't. And with things coming back down, the anticipations people are going to be traveling plenty come spring. So I wouldn't expect gas prices to nosedive because people are going to be driving all over the place for spring break and Easter and all that.
All right, and if they're willing to pay higher prices for it, there's really no reason to bring the price down.
There's no market reason to bring the price down. Yeah, that's it. It's like anything else. If you want to have the price come down, you need more supply. And supply is relatively controlled. I think the U.S. shale producers, right, I think they might be able to start, kicking it up a bit. But even then, they're not trying to knock it down, so they don't make any money. So they'll produce enough to, you know, it'll stabilize maybe around $3, but it's not going to go down to like $2. I think those days are gone.
Yeah, I don't see $2 gasoline coming back ever.
Yeah, because my understanding, shale oil isn't all that cheap to do. That's, or at least that's how it's been described to me. It's not like Saudi Arabia, just like you kick a hole in the sand and you're getting oil.
Right.
But you don't have to transport it as far, so you get that.
Yeah, it's cost prohibitive when price per barrel goes, you know, down.
Oh, and Saudi tried that, wasn't that 2015?
Mm-hmm.
They tried to put them out of business just by dropping their prices like super low.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean it was an organized play because OPEC is literally a cartel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that worked for a while, but I don't think it actually broke the those producers, and they were still at it. So I think we're stuck where we're at, unfortunately. get more fuel efficient cars. That's another thing. As you know, greater as fuel efficient gets, it gets more and more. You're consuming less gas than you would 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. So that's another factor. As someone did that analysis, cost per mile is still down when they factor in efficiency. I forget where that was. So that's another interesting take.
Oh, so that even though gas prices are going up, fuel efficiency CAFE standards have increased.
We're not back to like the 60s or 70s, right, when there was the last gas shortage. I mean, we're just the gas dollar goes a lot further than it did in the 70s. God, I wish I knew where the analysis was. I'll try to find it. So it's interesting. Doesn't mean it's fun to pay more at the pump.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't help me out much.
That's good to know. 40 years ago,
less
fuel efficient.
Don't you feel better? Your grandfather was. Your grandfather was playing a quarter, but you know.
Yeah,
I'm not much better than he is.
I'm reading this book about 76 to 80 history, and it's eerie how Carter was kind of in the same situations that Biden's in right now. There's an inflation, the gas prices, all this stuff. It's just kind of interesting that it's kind of your similar kind of Democrat in similar kind of circumstances.
At least there's no rationing.
Not yet.
Yes.
Odd and even days.
Yes.
I guess you guys remember Odd and Even Days. We've talked about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the you had the – was the last digit on your license?
Yep.
If it was odd, you got gas on odd days. And if it was even, you got gas on even days.
Yeah, that was the was that local or was that national?
I have no idea. I knew it was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I know it was in Pittsburgh. I couldn't tell you. Too young to be – well, I wasn't even driving, so yeah. Don't know that.
I just happen to recall, my dad having to go out on particular days to go get gas, and you did.
Yeah. I got to wait in line for an hour, getting 6 miles per gallon and wait to get gas.
Right.
So I can get gas. I don't even know. I mean, I hope the people were stopped their cars while they were waiting in line. You know, they didn't keep their cars running.
Oh, I'm sure they didn't. I mean, there was such desperation, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure they were fuel conscious enough to not sit there burning gas while they're waiting to get gas.
Right.
But yeah, it was just kind of interesting to see, to read this stuff. And it's also with Reagan on our eyes. And I don't know that we have anybody like Reagan in the wings right now, other than, I don't know if you consider Trump in the rings. I don't think Trump's position in 2024 is the same as Reagan's would have been in 78, 79.
Well, so do we think, I mean, back then, I mean, obviously we weren't in politics back then. There was a lot of, a lot was blamed on Carter, right? Melees forever, a lot was blamed on Carter that he kind of, there was no gas shortage. He kind of artificially created a shortage.
OPEC was messing with stuff.
Yeah, there was an oil embargo, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was definitely an embargo. It wasn't like a 70s were sparked in 1973 because of the Yom Kippur War. Yeah, they reduced supply and placed an embargo on countries supported Israel in the war. So that's what kicked that off. So they just didn't sell us gas. And that means the other suppliers could raise them. So yeah, so one, that supply was cut off. Two, other suppliers knew they could charge us more money, so they did.
Right. But there was not – okay. But, I mean, it wasn't like we ran out
– So that was still Nixon. Hold up. Let me see.
I thought there was two sets of odd and even days. I thought it was like 73 and 76. Was it not?
Yeah, no. it would have been 70. So the later followed by the 1979 oil crisis.
Was it 70? I thought it was twice during the Carter administration.
79 was an energy crisis caused by a drop in oil production in the wake of the Iranian Revolution. There we go. So that's how it, the price of crude doubled to $39.50 a barrel, over 12 months. So that was 79.
Yeesh.
So if you imagine, yeah, in any market, the double the price of a lead supply, that's a rough one. So.
Definitely.
And then there's a 1980s oil glut. So hopefully that'll come soon.
I remember, when I was young, gas was like, you know, you get, it cost less than the gallon. You know what I mean? Like, it was 99 cents a gallon or 78 cents a gallon, 69 cents a gallon. That was, I remember that in my youth.
Yes, it did.
I was young enough that I said, the gasoline pump is broken because, like, you know, it's costing more than you're paying more for gallon than you're getting gas. Like, that was the first time I'm like, that's not, you know, the pump must be broken.
And I remember the controversy when gas was going to go over a dollar a gallon because gas pumps weren't set up to handle that.
They didn't have the third digit?
They didn't have a one?
No, they did not have that extra digit. Yeah. And I remember gas at like 20, 30, 25, 30 cents, something like that. And then, yeah, then started going up.
Wow. I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, they just never thought gas would get that like everything else, right? Y2K, well, you know, that wasn't an issue.
We never had to worry about putting that extra thing in there. It costs too much. No, gas will never go over a dollar.
That's crazy.
Once Harry Hughes, governor of Maryland, proposed odd even, as was used during the 73 oil crisis. Several states implemented on-even gas rationing, including California, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, Oregon, and Texas. So, yeah, we were one of the states that adopted it. And it was a throwback to 73 during the first gas crisis. So, are we in a gas crisis right now, would you say, or is people just kind of putting up with it because everything's gone up so expensive? I don't know if anyone considers this a crisis yet.
Not yet.
So, I don't think it's a crisis. It's just expensive. It's not that it's not available.
It could be a crisis if it was available, but so expensive that most people couldn't afford it. But I don't see people like protesting.
I will say that the large trucks are gathering and kind of hanging out in places and driving around needlessly, I might want to add, to protest. So, it can't be affecting things that much. When a truck can, you know, drive empty.
Drive to and fro.
Yeah, empty, right?
Which protest are we talking about?
The ones in Canada and...
Yeah, but that has to do with, like, what they're saying is their livelihood, right?
Well, no, I'm not saying that. Sure. No, I understand, but I'm just saying that, you know, if they have to put fuel in the tank and they're not getting paid.
Yeah, right. So it's not a primary concern to the level of, the mandated vaccine, I guess, as they see it. Cause that's what that's about, right?
Sure. Yeah. And masks. Yeah.
Well, they don't have to wear the masks in the truck. I think I'm worse if they're against the mandated vaccine. And where does that stand? Are they still pushing for the mandate of vaccine in Canada?
Last I heard, Trudeau was going to seize the bank accounts of those protesting and freeze their accounts, so they ran out of money. And he put that he put that up through his, you know, Congress of sorts. That he was gonna freeze their bank accounts. So they ran out of money, and thus their protesting would have to end.
Jim Sengo remains down. Vowed to freeze bank accounts. The truckers protesting his COVID-19 vaccine mail. That means for sure remains down. Right wing Christian funder website. Jim Sengo remained down. The platform has not said anything over 24 hours. Wow, that seems pretty draconian to me.
You do what we say. That doesn't have a lot of freedom attached to it, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to do the, like, this will have impact on your health care, because a lot of those, my understanding is they help you buy private systems. Mm-hmm. And then those private systems can, like, enforce, well, if you want to be a member of this, you have to have a vaccine. That's kind of strong-arming it, but at least it's giving you an option. This is like, we're going to take your money away.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty draconian. Like, I don't know. Like, that doesn't seem right to me. I can't believe average Canadians are down with that. Like, it sets a pretty ugly precedent, right?
Well, it would if people, I don't know, I don't think people are thinking far enough, right? There, something has to be done, he can do this, right? But they're not thinking, wait, what if something had to be done against me, right? What if I did something that Justin Trudeau did not like? Could he seize my bank accounts? Well, the answer seems yes, right?
Well, I mean, it's, again, why it's helpful to have a minimal understanding of Kant, the whole categorical imperative. Would it be right to, in any situation that a government is in power, to enact monetary seizures on people that they disagree with? Like, in any situation? I'm going to go ahead and say no. I don't want to be ruled by a government that, if they disagreed with me, can seize my money.
Yeah.
Like, to just assume that they're going to only do that when they agree with you is maybe a bad idea.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that anybody that is in favor of this doesn't know who Kant is. Emmanuel.
Oh, no, I think Justin Trudeau would have read Kant, right? Like, he's supposed to be this erudite, enlightened ruler. To do this is insane. would he support the idea that if a Christian pro-life ruler came into power, that to prevent abortion, they were going to seize the bank accounts of abortion providers? Like, he's gold with that. Yep, they're in power.
I'm gold. Right. They wanted it more. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I guess they just wanted it more. If they didn't want it more, they wouldn't have won. So I guess everyone accepts this. No, of course not. They would be irate. Yeah. The whole this happened, it got shut down, thankfully, in the United States, with the banks reporting any transaction amount or transaction on any account over $600.
Right.
I'm telling you, if you want to start creating conservative, Republican, libertarian types, keep pushing on the banking thing. You want to build up an opposition party like you wouldn't believe? I mean, really, keep coming after people's money.
I don't know if I said this. I don't know if you hear when I said this, but more and more, I'm becoming more libertarian. I am.
Oh, I've been leaning towards libertarianism for years. I just wish they weren't a little so crazy.
Oh yeah, right. I mean,
but from the mindset, I'm 100% behind it.
Right.
And when they get attacked by people, it's, well, you know, it's not how the real world works. Okay. But most of the things that they're asking for is how I would like the real world to work. Like, leave me alone. Like, if you're going to take my money, you should have a court order. And I should have done something illegal. And that illegal thing isn't just not what you wanted me to not do. That should be a higher burden for illegality. So I'm more and more, every time that something just ticks me off, I usually like libertarian position.
They still to me kind of, I don't know. They seem to be like the, you know, come join us. You'll have, you know, all the drugs you want. You know, sex workers for everybody. It'll be free. You know,
I don't think they want it to be free. They just want you to be free to choose or not choose to do these things.
Okay, yeah, right. Then okay, that's a good point. But I mean, come to our side. You know, drugs are legal, prostitutes are legal, anything you want is legal.
Yeah, I think they play up sex work and drugs a little too much. I'd be okay with not fighting the war on drugs, which we've obviously lost, given the amount of money we spent on the fact that more and more people are getting addicted to drugs. the experiments that they had in, like, lightning blitzkrieg style libertarianism, where like a libertarian might win like a city election, and then we're disbanding services. Okay, so that's a bad idea. Like, I don't want the fire department to be closed like tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it can go too far. But the general premise behind, you know, the government working within a certain time, certain set of behavior. Yeah, I like that. Typically, libertarianism, when they point to their antecedents, they're talking about like Hayek and Milton Friedman, and they just mean rule of law. Mm-hmm. They want as minimal a rule of law as is necessary.
They're still pro Second Amendment. They're still pro First Amendment.
Yeah, sure. You know? Well, no, not still. Of course they're pro First Amendment.
Right.
Of course they're pro Second Amendment.
Right.
Because those are liberties. Right in the title, libertarian.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have your liberties infringed upon. They would be more like, oh God, who was it? George Mason? Is it George Mason who had they shouldn't have had a Bill of Rights because all these rights should have been assumed from the get-go? They shouldn't have to be carved out. They should.
Sure, right, yep.
I thought that maybe that wasn't, but it was...
Yeah, it was more...
One of the Virginians was making that argument. You shouldn't have to have an enunciated Bill of Rights because the rights of the individual should be supreme over government, first and foremost. And then, as an individual... grants. That's the other side of it that I'm actually a pretty big fan of, the idea of assent. You come into assent to a certain set of laws by like a collective agreement with the understanding that like if someone starts, you know, betraying that, some sorts of like, you know, start, you know, being coercive with that, then you're the right to defect. That's Ludwig von Mises' take. And interestingly enough, that's a lot of what the anarchists have to say, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think both the left and the right have a wing of people that, in the end, don't feel the government should begin as the first and primary organizer. It should be people themselves. And then, as necessary, the empowerment of some sort of government only... by the will of the people. That isn't how most systems work. Most systems assume the government's the first organizing principle, and you kind of owe it without choice to participate.
Right. So I can see that. You know, libertarianism is in its underpinnings. I mean, it agrees with conservatism a lot. Right.
Oh yeah, no, it's the end point about, it's the end point of a lot of what conservatism claims to be about. If there's any points of disagreement, I tend to think it's conservatism itself being, well, we don't really mean that.
It is hard for me to, you know, just legalize all drugs. I mean, it's hard for me to say that, to think that that's a good idea. I mean,
yeah, but it's different. There's the difference. There's the Trudeau side of it. Well, then I'll just take their money. It's fine to say, I think everybody should be vaccinated. I think everybody should eschew using drugs. It's fine to believe that drugs don't have a proper place. Recreational drugs have no proper place in society. It's the methodology of getting people to agree with you. And, you know, again, it's not just the one side. Most libertarians, anarchists, as few of them as there are, would agree with this as well. No one's entitled to coerce you into doing something that isn't affecting others directly. If you're going to say, well, indirectly, well, you can worry about assault and other things later. Libertarians and anarchists, that matter, all are usually pretty fine about self-defense. But if someone wants to shoot up with heroin, I shouldn't have the right to dictate to them what they do and don't shoot up with. And so long as that's not applied to me, I can see it. So the libertarian position, anarchist position on that tends to be pretty much the same. Where it differs, and where I think I kind of favor libertarianism, is libertarians kind of chunk it up into a, well, how do we negotiate then getting stuff done? Well, then that's when the markets come in, right? So libertarianism usually is pretty favorable to, you know, capitalist markets. The idea that there's going to be, you know, goods and services being exchanged, and there's going to be a dollar value that's going to be the way that people purchase, not usually dollars, but actually they prefer gold. And that's your underlying mechanism. And then the anarchists try to do it more with, like, voting. And that's the part I don't trust. Markets make sense. You're going to go out and, like, the Wild Wild West, right? The, you know, people these take over tracts of land, they'd start farming it, and then they would, you know, start exchanging and stuff like that. And out in the prairie on the plains, you know, they kind of had to negotiate between one another. We'll keep the natives out of this. and in those negotiations, there usually wasn't like a lawman 5 feet away to oversee the deal. You kind of had to rely on handshakes and your word, reputation, things like that. That's kind of a libertarian approach. Perfect? No. But no. At least you get two sides, you know, being up front or in some way, you know, they're dealing with one another and coming to agreement rather than the third party dictating for all, which can happen, doesn't always happen, can happen in government situations, such as Trudeau taking people's money if they don't want to get a vaccine, which they don't talk about for whatever reason. Or even don't feel it's effective anymore because Omicron is way more damaging against vaccinated folks than any other prior strain.
Yes. what say you, Mr. Jeff?
What say you? I don't know. I kind of, the older I get, tend to be a little more libertarian too. You know?
So you just want people leaving alone in general.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Get off my lawn sounds so much more appealing. You know,
well, out of my bank.
Yes.
I mean, like, it's yet again, like, I can't say it enough. If they want to make an opposition party, boy, they're going about it the right way. I couldn't tell you to do anything better than go after somebody's money.
Yeah.
You're getting all sorts of people down at the rally if you start hitting people's money. All sorts of people.
Yeah, that's right, Aaron. You want to motivate people? You mess with their money. You must have their finances.
Right. You want to get people of all races singing Kumbaya together? Come after their money collectively.
right? You're affecting my ability to eat, to have clothes, to have a roof over my head.
Feed my family. You got my attention. Take care of them. Yep.
Yeah, right. You have my attention.
I mean, people want, like, taxes to start with. You're going to introduce this as just a thing? We're just going to, like, take your cash? Boy, boy, oh, boy. You're going to have an opposition party like you wouldn't believe. If he does do this, I'll be stunned if he keeps it obvious. Because they've had conservatives in before. I think they'll be gearing up for another one. That's the worst idea is to go after people's cash. The worst.
Mm-hmm.
And, it seems like that's his game plan from what I'm reading here.
I would hope that his advisors, say, wait, let's just back this up a little bit, huh? I would hope so. But.
So, you know what's interesting about this? This again gets into how the other side's opposition is viewed when it comes to, like, protests, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these they're doing blockades. Is that right? They're blocking up, like, highways and things.
Right.
And they're getting upset with all that. In other circumstances, I bet they would consider this, like, legitimate protest behavior.
If it was, like, a Black Lives Matter protest?
Yeah, they have more. I think they've got more indigenous people's rights and rallies and things like that. But even then, they have sent people in, like, if they're occupying land for pipelines and things like that. Trudeau has sent people in, too. So I guess he's maybe consistent on that. But just in general, yeah. When you don't fit what they're cool with your protesting, they crack down on you.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what will that be when it's when Trudeau's out of office and his own pet issue is up? Do you want to support people getting cracking down on your protests or not?
there seems to be winners and losers with protests. I mean, in both Canada and the United States. So there's the
now I'm not going to say it couldn't have been cultivated, but I seem to have seen a number of, like, multi-ethnic truck drivers in this. Have you?
You have? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's not all white Canadians that I'm saying.
It's not privileged white people.
So they wouldn't be privileged anyways because they're truck drivers. I'm not saying you can't make a good living on as being a truck driver, but I mean, let's not call a long haul truck driver living a privileged life. Like, from a monetary standpoint, I know.
Oh, no, I wouldn't.
This is very much a class thing. And this is an upper class person, like, squelching lower class, organization. Marx would not be siding with Trudeau in this matter. 100% will not be. and that's, you know, just there because he was all about organizing, right? And this is organized labor up against management, plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
So even on that standpoint, this isn't what I think Trudeau bills himself as.
Do you think? I would hope our friends up north would view this as negative and would not view this as a favorable way to conduct a country. And
I think Canada, much like the United States, has a silent middle that shocked the world when they got Trump elected, the way England had a silent middle when they voted Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
That the, you know, the professional class, it kind of lives. I'm reading this book right now, Anna Tannenbaum. I have something about, you know, totalitarian or whatever, something. But it's really interesting because she's kind of, like, tying in these different, this kind of this global wave. Because, you know, in the United States, we thought everything, we were so myopic, we just thought everything in terms of Trump. She's talking about the, you know, changes happening in Brexit, the changes happening in Poland and Hungary. And there's kind of this wave of people that are just getting fed up with a ruling class that some of it's racially motivated, but some of it's economic. You know, they're just tired of kind of getting dragged along and everything's getting decided by, you know, in the United States, it's going to be like L.A., New York, you know, maybe Chicago, D.C., or some other coastal cities in there, Boston, Philly, you know, coastal-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else is kind of like along for the ride.
Right.
You know, in England, you had London running the show. there's metropolitan classes in Hungary and Poland, and there's kind of like a conservative side that, you know, again, there's maybe some racial stuff in there, but not all of it. You know, there's a lot of just, you know, change they didn't want to give, they weren't on board with. You know, I think that's why a lot of the, you know, trans issues are such a hot button for people. I mean, it's just people feel like a certain group of people are deciding what's moral and what isn't moral for the entire United States, and they don't have to say it. They're just kind of told, and their the opinion of them is they live in a black backwater and they should just follow along.
And right. It's always they that need to you know, change.
Yep. Right?
coercion. Many times.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is hey, you know, we're the government, we're here to help. We know that this vaccine is the best thing. And we know it's so good for you that we're gonna force it. It's gonna be mandatory. Everyone is gonna have to get it, but it's for the good of the order, and we're gonna do it. And some people said, "Wait," you know, and just because people say "wait" does not make them crazy or bad people, or, you know, I mean, there are good reasons to say, "Wait a minute, let's look at this." Whether or not it's good or bad, or, you know, people have that right. People, you know, have the right.
Well, that gets back to your drugs thing, right? Because you're like, I can't leave out people aside for themselves, whether or not they want to use.
I don't like to. I'm saying I'm there, but I don't like it. I don't like that.
No, but I think that's the thing with libertarianism. It's sort of like the I'll support what you say, but I'll defend your right to say it.
Yeah.
It's just that, but with everything.
Right.
Like, with literally everything.
I don't like your drug use, but I support your right to use it.
To use drugs. No joke, for sure. And you think, well, when would I want to use drugs? How about if you're a cancer patient in late stage cancer and there is a novel treatment? You know, why not take the novel treatment? What do you have to lose? Well,
I don't see that as recreational drug use, though.
Right, but it's treated the same way. Because it's not considered a safe drug. So you don't get to use it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Someone else decides for you what's safe.
Right, the FDA.
FDA. Now, you might be able to get into a research study, maybe. And even then, to be blunt, I'm sorry, I'm not in here for the science, I'm trying to not die. So I don't want the research method, I might get a placebo. What if I just want to buy the drug, thanks?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just take notes on whether or not I'm dead at the end of this.
Right.
Like, you have to play a game, it's end of life, and your end of life doesn't matter, unless it can be served as a research experiment for somebody else, in which case you might be getting placebo and it might not matter at all.
And then really what makes you different than testing on an animal, a monkey, a rabbit?
Nothing. You got to sign a form. That's what was different.
Right. Yeah, really. Yeah.
That's all. You were able to ink your name in a cognizant fashion, whereas a monkey wouldn't be able to.
And you don't get a banana either at the end of the day.
And you don't get a banana either, right. So, you know, so again, I tend to side with that approach. Wouldn't say it's perfect. I don't know how you handle roads. I mean, if you got everybody to donate to roads when they wanted to, we'd all be driving four-wheel drives over gravel.
And no bridge of standing.
No, right. And we can't get.
We'd be doing Pitfall. swinging on vines across the chasms.
Yeah. Right? I think that's where libertarianism gets into fantasy land, because it assumes that the market will take over and they'll take care of everything. It's kind of a, did you see in your little group, it was from like 6 years ago, but there was a pie in the sky, lefty little futuristic op-ed piece where this person's talking about, we don't own anything anymore. We have no privacy and it's better than ever. This socialist paradise thing where the robots took over everything. And basically, all we have to do is agree not to have any private property anymore. That seemed to be key. Like, the one thing you really, really, really had to do is get rid of private property. And then all of a sudden, everything's fine. All you need is the lack of private property in robots. Now, who gets to tell the robots what to make? What? Didn't seem to get, like, enunciated there. Like, and then you're thinking, I ride a bicycle. Well, why did they make you a bicycle? What if the robots thought skateboards were better? You don't want a skateboard? Well, maybe we'll take your bank account. They don't seem to like a skateboard. What do you think of that?
Right.
We're the robots. We do everything. You just gave us the power to do everything in society. We want to see you on a skateboard because you fall over a lot. We robots think that's funny. What if that's a thing?
Yeah, and in a way, though, I feel like we belong to robots in some way. You call up customer care or customer service or something. You're like, I have this charge. I need you. You know, I made a mistake. Can you please reverse this charge? I'm sorry. The computer won't let me. Okay. I understand. Yep. You know, the computer won't let you. But you know, who does the computer work for you, or do you work for the computer? Right. I mean, can we just get somebody on the phone to just reverse this chart? Oh, I'm sorry, the computer won't let me. I heard what you were saying, but.
Well, so the downside that I don't like in libertarianism, not libertarianism per se, but like market systems in general, is the same thing that happens in socialist systems too, is there can be like an overall winner. And at that point, you have no choice. So let's take telecommunications right now. Do you have like your choice of telecom providers, like many, many, and they're all like competing? They can't wait to get your services. So you can really change it any time, your internet, your phone, and they'll happily take you on. And it's like a price war to get your business.
Well, cell phones, right?
Cell phones kind of, but they lock you in a contract, right?
They do. They want to. No, not particularly. No,
I mean, because pretty much like they're duopolies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody wins and then they protect their winning position. So that's where it gets dangerous.
Right. I mean, yeah. Comcast. You can have Comcast, or you can have Cox Cable, or you can have Verizon Cable, but not all in the same area. So you have to, you know.
Here we've got Comcast and Verizon.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, they cost roughly the same amount of money.
It's amazing.
Go ahead.
They have the same infrastructure costs and everything. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy how that would happen. Now it is expensive to get a communication company set up. Initially there were a private company, but they were like basically given, Ma Bell was given carte blanche in the United States, and then it was forced to break up. And then they just reassembled, right?
Mm-hmm.
Verizon and Comcast were, their antecedents, their prior companies were Bell and Verizon, which were, one and the same at one point. So they just kind of reassembled like the Borg, like Voltron.
Yeah.
And you're kind of back to where you started. I don't have a good answer for how to beat that. However, I'd still rather take my chances in a market system where there could potentially be somebody who comes out versus like a mono system where there really is no other alternative to your, one party government ruling the country. So yeah, I tend to like libertarianism.
Yes.
And on that note.
Yeah, we are just about ready to go to break. But that libertarianism, yes, it's, Aaron has a lot to say on that, which is good because.
I do have a lot to say on that.
Because I need to, like I said, I need to start, you know, coming to terms that, you know, I need to change my views on certain things, even though I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and I don't know that it has to be the party, right? And libertarianism, I think, is better considered like a philosophy. And, like, the party that would most likely be able to enact that, or most would likely be looking to enact it would be the
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point, because I fail to like any libertarian leaders. I fail to
And that's okay, right? Like, I'm really not talking about the party. Because that can be really wacky.
Yeah.
I think of it more as a governance philosophy on what I want, whoever gets elected, what I want that to look like. And we can talk in the next hour how even on the left, I can see a lot of what they're asking for really clearly in libertarian terms. Whereas I think the position they come from, it gets really muddled because they want to tie it to this giant, like, historical, you know, whether right or wrong, victimization narrative. Rather than kind of like very simple, what do you want policing to look like? What do you want taxation to look like? What do you want markets to look like? That would, I think, provide a more direct answer.
Mm-hmm. So
a lot of what they're after. Now, when it comes to wealth inequality, that's a different story. But when it comes to about fair treatment, if people were to honestly adhere to like market principles, I think it would be to a lot of people's benefit. And we can probably take that up in the next hour.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you. We are coming up on break, and so we will see you in 5 short minutes. Thank you for tuning into Revolution Radio, a light gunfight with Ed, Jeff, and Aaron, and we'll see you in 5 minutes. Thank you.
ERB.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Are off. Are we in the end game, or are we simply living a replay of a time that's already happened, with no choices? Different people have different points of view. When it comes to creation versus evolution, my point of view, we were created to evolve. The Red Pill, every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern in Studio B. www.freedomslips.com and revolution.radio. Check it out.
join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
The original machine had a base plate of prefamulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing, in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus o-deltoid type, placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet. I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, welcome back to Polite Gunfight.
Get a little double echo there.
I know, so do you. Double boil in trouble. I don't know why. I think it's the studio. But I think it's gone now.
Yeah, it seems like it went away.
Yes. Well, so interesting first hour. It went very, very fast.
I thought it was an interesting first hour.
I did too. We didn't let Jeff talk enough the first hour.
He's got to cut me off.
Just stomp on him, Jeff. Just say, hey, stop.
You there, Jeff?
Oh my gosh, is he still here?
We scared him off.
No. Mr. Ty? He's muted. So maybe he's not back yet.
Okay.
I hope he comes back. We'll talk about him when he's back.
That's right.
I don't know. We are back on the air. Maybe the train's coming by. We have not heard the train yet. We were talking about something and I wanted to get your take on this.
Shoot.
So there are reform in the courts for What's it called? Bail? Bonding? Bail, right?
Yeah, right.
And there's kind of a new precedent being set in certain places where bail and bonding has gone to zero or near zero. So somebody gets accused of something, gets arrested, booked, processed, and then their bail or bonding is low. And
they should either be – I'm 100% for this. They're either a flight risk and should not be allowed out of jail, or they are not a flight risk and should be allowed out of jail. One, we begin at this country with innocent until proven guilty. It's a court precept. There's a caveat there, and that it is kind of anti-constitutional one, the idea that if someone's, you know, in a position to go on the run, to go on the lam, or does go on the lam, they maybe forfeit that right, and we should have that as consideration. But for the most part, what we have is a system that people who have enough money can buy their way out, and people who don't have enough money can't. That's the only factor, not innocence or guilt. And that, to me, is wrong.
Yes, I mean, when you look at the average, you know, bonding, right? So if bail is, let's say, $25,000.
You pay someone a portion of that.
You can pay a bail bondsman, usually 10%. So if it's $25,000,
you might... Bucks.
$2,500. They will cover you for the 90% of it. They usually require some. It's not usually like a I'll be back. Sometimes they have to give something up or put something, you know, put a car note up for ransom or something, right? To make sure they're not going to lose their money, right?
Right. So the understanding is the bond itself. Is paid to the court. They understand it's paid. The court gives the money back.
Right.
So you don't pay them like $50,000 and they keep it. So that's why the bail bond can stay in business.
Right.
Like they are taking your money and they're not giving you that money back.
They're not giving you the 10% back, no.
Right. So if you have 10, let's say like this, like if you've got like 10 convicts and you got $25,000, then you cover all of them. You make $25,000, if you can get them all to come in. You only lose money if they don't show up. And that's where, bail bonds, bounty hunters come in. Bring you to court.
Right. We'll make sure you come back.
Right.
If you were planning on not, you're coming back.
Yeah, they'll come get you.
But don't they require collateral, like, you know, don't they require some sort of collateral? Like you have to, you know, hawk your car for it, or you know, if you don't.
Well,
come
I mean,
back.
I think you pay them more, right?
If they don't show.
Yeah, or I mean, even I think you have to get like you might pay like $3,000. They get like $500 back.
I don't know, but yeah, but anyway, right. So, but still, I mean, if your bail is $25,000, $2,500 is still quite a big chunk of change.
It's steep. A lot of people can't make that.
No, and if it's
especially when you should be spending your money on better stuff like a lawyer.
Right. Even if it's not $25,000, even if your bond, your bail is $2,500. Right. You only have to pay $250. That could be steep for certain people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's not your first go-round. People have bailed you out before, or bonded you out before, and now you're, you know, you might lose a friend or two, and people might not answer the phone when you call them from weird numbers anymore.
For sure.
But you're right. I mean, that I do agree whether or not you're a flight risk or you know, you're a dangerous person, right? If I don't know. You're innocent until proven guilty, but there's something else to that too, is that in the United States, you're really only innocent until proven guilty if you have a jury.
So innocent until proven guilty is almost exclusively considered in the United States a matter while you're on trial in terms of the jury itself.
Right.
The state absolutely assumes you're guilty.
Mm-hmm.
It is the 100% of the assumption of the state that you are guilty of what you're being charged with.
Mm-hmm. Which is why they have a prosecutor.
They have a prosecutor with an entire investigation team, and no such investigation team provides to the defendant.
Right.
You do not have equal dollars of equal investigation power and prowess being applied to criminal defense.
No, you don't. But, and right, and you don't have, if you don't have a jury, and you only have a judge, then you really don't, then you're really not, I mean, obviously, what you're saying is obviously true, that you're innocent until proven guilty in front of a jury, but if there's not a jury, then you're just...
The presumption of the, I mean, whatever, they can say they're being objective or whatnot. But in the end, yeah, it's they're unconsciously, but you know, really consciously of the opinion you did it.
If Jeff comes over to my house, this will never happen, by the way. I mean, yes, he's welcome over to my house. That's not what I'm saying. Jeff comes over to my house and he leaves and I say, hey, Jeff, you took my TV. Jeff says, no, I didn't. And I called the police. And I say, Jeff took my TV. And they say, okay, well, so they go and ask Jeff, did you take the TV? No, I didn't. He say, well, Jeff's not allowed in my property anymore, or my house anymore, right? Well, so Jeff's guilty. I mean, because they said he did. So he's not allowed in my house. There's a matter where he can't defend himself, right? He can't say, wait, I didn't take your TV, so I'm allowed out of your house. And it becomes, I mean, it's just, I mean, friends is one thing, but what happens if, you know, what happens if it's, okay, I don't mean to use Jeff because then this might get too personal. Okay, so it's somebody you don't know and they have an ex-wife and you're like, well, this person came over and they kicked my dog. Well, now they're not allowed on my property, but then, you know, they can't see their kid now. It's harder for them to see their child, right? Because of this, right? And it was all because someone said something, you know? He's guilty.
Yes, it can escalate. You can get a reputation, be kind of seen as somebody or known as somebody, and that will affect your standing, whether or not it's in relationship to an initial crime. That may or may not have been unsolved. There's plenty of people that were accused of a crime in their small town or where they're from, or even not so small town. And everyone, quote unquote, knew they did it. Mm-hmm. Until it comes out that maybe they didn't do it. A lot of times the police will hound somebody and then it comes out that, you know, oh, you got it all wrong. And then, you know, it's five police lieutenants or police chiefs later, they'll be, we're very sorry about that.
No, right, right.
Super, super sorry. And that chief might be. The one they did it three police chiefs ago, he's dead and it doesn't matter. He ruined your life.
Anyway, are you back, Jeff?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we were saying that we didn't give you a lot of
hair. I kicked your dog. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you didn't mean
it. Yeah, so I was talking over you, Jeff. I apologize. Did you have some more insights that you wanted to share?
No, just going back to what we were saying earlier. Yeah, I'm tending more towards libertarian thoughts. There's a woman running for office here, and I heard her commercial a couple times, and I've been meaning to bring it up the past couple of weeks. She touts herself as being a mega conservative. Have you heard that phrase? Phraseology?
No, I have not.
Yes. Mega conservative. and she's, you know, pro-life, pro-this, pro-that, pro-the-other thing, and it's just kind of like, yeah, she's just sounding very, very right-wing, and it's just kind of like, okay, how about any of the centrist people that I can vote for instead of this
I don't want a mega anything. Like, a mega leave me alone type is cool.
Yeah. But like, a mega burger would be good.
A mega burger. Oh, boy. That really does sound good right now. I could go for a mega burger right now.
Right?
Now, again, like, I think it can go too far. Like, if you have somebody elected, like, you know what? Tomorrow we're just disbanding all maintenance of roads, all police departments, all fire stations.
You mean pretty much like we have here now with bridges collapsing and police not showing up and responding.
That's a whole other thing. Like, that's happening in Baltimore right now, downtown Baltimore, you know, for a while now. I think the police have kind of like lost control. And, you know, it's certainly not because they're not being paid, but just like there was, you know, some corruption on the police force, maybe even more than we know. They had an issue with, can't even forget the guy's name. There's a guy who died in police custody.
Freddie Gray,
yeah. Damages in my head. That was Pittsburgh so long ago. Freddie Gray. So, yeah, they're in a position right now that I feel that they kind of might have lost, like, the sense of moral sanction that they had in the community's face, and now they're afraid to do anything. Or maybe they're discouraged and aren't doing anything. Who knows? Something like that. So, what's a libertarian answer to policing? I have no idea what that looks like. I think you need to have police forces, because in the end, I don't think everyone's going to be nice to one another forever. And I'm always going to be a fan of, like, private property. Like, like your example of having your TV. I always believe in a future where there's going to be things like your TV. Not like collective TVs that there's so many floating around that the robots make.
Collective TVs, yes.
Right. I just won't ever happen. I just don't believe in that future. Maybe if we get the Star Trek level and everybody gets their own starship. But even then, like, we're not going to make starships for everybody. I won't have a starship. I'm not giving you a starship and a holodeck. You got to be in the Federation, in Starfleet. So yeah, we're gonna need police. Should the police focus on large scale drug empires? I don't know. What's the drug empire doing? We don't. Pharmaceutical companies make tons of money. They're a drug empire. They do more powerful stuff than heroin. They use prescriptions, so that's legal. I don't know. I don't like drug overdoses. Is arresting them making that go away? And in the small towns in, like, the heartland where there's drug, yeah, there's also what's a fentanyl problems, like meth problems.
Fentanyl's got out of control.
Right. So is the idea we're going to send in more cops? Like, is that what's going to work? We're going to look at the 90s and say, oh, that worked great. Let's apply the crack cocaine model to fentanyl.
Where are you? Where are you when, like, I don't know. You at least hear the rumors and the buzz that, like, you know, you don't know how much fentanyl will kill you, yet you buy it to use it. You know? Where are you in life?
Down. You're down. Yeah, you're way down. Right, for sure. And I think it's as misguided to say in the 90s and 80s, you know, telling inner city black folks, yeah, just say no. And it's happening now in the rural areas. Yeah, you know, just don't do fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a bigger crisis than that, right? It isn't a matter of the fentanyl's there and they're saying, what the heck, let's take some of it. Like, it's desperation, right? Exactly the right question is, where are you when you're taking fentanyl? Where were you in the 90s when you're taking crack?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nowhere good is the answer. So how do you build a society where you have as few people as that level as possible? That's the question.
I mean, it's so. I mean, do you? I mean, like myself, like I've considered like going. I mean, you can get Narcan, right? You can go into the pharmacy and supposedly
you're carrying, like, having Narcan at the ready just in case you get on somebody on a fentanyl overdose.
Well, yeah, but
I thought about that.
Yeah, but here's my concern is that if fentanyl is so deadly, would I have enough protection to protect myself to, you know, squirt the little up the person's nose to hopefully revive them, right? And not cause myself harm.
Oh, you won't. Your exposure to fentanyl would be on a secondary basis wouldn't be anything.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, unless they had some residue or something on them that, you know.
That's not how you absorb it.
Okay.
It's not like it's like a transdermal. So yeah, you can totally get Narcan on it. Narcan.
But I've been thinking about that. Like, just
I think it's not a half bad idea. It's like no CPR, right? Is it gonna be the lifesaver? Probably not. But it's something.
I hear it's pretty darn good at doing its job. Like
My understanding is if you get it at the right time, it can be really, really effective. It just comes down to timing. It's no matter what.
Well, sure, yeah, right.
Where you caught them in the overdose, right?
Right.
But it's crazy that you see that on billboards.
Mm-hmm.
You know. There's a cheats 20 miles down the road. Maybe this will help save someone's life. It's crazy to think about when you're on the start bike.
Yeah, right.
but I mean, again, the question isn't do we have enough emergency revival meds?
No.
It's a matter of, you know, why are you taking it, to your point? Like, where are you at? And I think, you know, I listened to these two podcasts last week. They were all like, you know, they're from the BBC, but they're analyzing the United States. One was talking about the whole Trump election QAnon thing, and another was about like the lefty kind of cancel culture stuff. Like, where does cancel culture come from, and who do people try to cancel and stuff like that? And I think in both of them, you know, they didn't really directly talk about another case, but it was kind of indirectly kind of discussed. There's a real sort of emptiness that drives a lot of this.
What drives it?
Emptiness.
Emptiness, okay.
You know, people are filling themselves with on various things. Maybe they get just hopped up on these all sorts of either conspiracy theories. They brought up, you know, the Russia hoax against Trump is another conspiracy theory, and they called it that. They discussed, you know, people, you know, just going after or just attacking people online. You know, what motivates that? I think it's just a matter of, I think really a lack of fulfillment in people's lives that they lean on and then are agitated by social media.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, you know, the online space can be, you know, for as positive as it builds itself to be, it can be very empty and depressing.
And toxic. I mean, absolutely. A lot of people have more, there have been studies and people have more self-esteem issues and depression and stuff because they, you know, spend too much time on social media or think that all of those staged pictures are real.
And reality, right.
Everybody's life is better than theirs because, wow, they get to go to the fancy restaurants and vacations and et cetera and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they'll talk about, like, you know, 4chan's toxic, 8chan's toxic, you know, Facebook's toxic, Instagram's toxic.
Mm-hmm.
You are in just this maze of just, like, noise and light. And I'm not saying there isn't, like, some little areas where people would look at their cat pictures, but, man, it can be over the top in a lot of different ways. And, yeah, you're seeing all that, and you're stuck in some podunk little town. Feels like the world's passing by.
Yeah, right.
I don't think the life, like, I think the life people led, I don't want to say that in the 50s and 60s, but I think people could feel a certain amount of, like, contentness and pride about where they're at in their life. That seems gone now. And, yeah, I get it that there were, like, oppressed minorities. I'm not saying that. But, like, the average person, I think, felt more content in the 50s and 60s.
You can get the family in, the station wagon, drive somewhere, you know, get there, get out, have a good time, picnic, vacation, whatever, ambling.
Yeah, and for as much as people even say, oh, so much worse back then, everyone is jealous of what they had back then, though. You know what I mean? Like, they don't talk about, like, the millennials and the Gen Zers, they're not talking about how easy they have it. They're talking about how hard they have it.
Right. You're right.
So they must be romanticizing something, or must be romanticizing something, right? And that would be the past.
Right.
Not romanticizing the 80s and 90s, because that's when things started to kind of change. So what's left? 50s and 60s, the baby boom itself. Or the boom time years, I should say, because maybe that was 40, sure, but they're romanticizing it just as much as everyone else has. And I think that was in the early 60s, you know, again, I'm not saying it wasn't perfect, but in general, there was kind of there's the show, The Wonder Years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a real nostalgia, you know, pre-Vietnam getting bad, post-war, where everyone felt pretty good.
Mm-hmm. The 50s, absolutely.
Yeah, late 50s, early 60s,
mm-hmm.
Where Kennedy got shot. Yeah, no, not saying anything's perfect, but why are people complaining about housing and how hard it is right now? Why would they be saying that? They should be saying everything's better. I don't hear anybody saying that.
Mm-mm.
Maybe around certain, like, racial issues, but even around the racial issues, no one's still saying, well, now we're satisfied.
No.
So it might have gotten better, but not in better in a way that it didn't get them worse than they wanted to be, which, again, seems like maybe the mythology of what the 60s felt, that the early the late 50s or the 50s and 60s felt they were. Maybe that's what it is.
They didn't know how good they had it.
Oh, I'm sure they didn't know how good they have it. But even the people that were cynical about who those people were still want what they had.
Mm-hmm.
The they own the house. They have the community that they're participating in.
Yeah.
They romanticize that every bit as much as the right wing does.
It just seems like there's so much less. There was just so much less overhead.
There was less overhead.
Everything, mm-hmm. For everything. Yep. I mean, you can't work on a car, you know, with a freaking specialized computer.
Well, I was thinking about that because I was at the eye doctor's today, and it was, you know. I come out and, you know, there's, you know, the people talk about the little local area because it's a local place. It's not like a chain. And, you know, in a functioning society, everyone has their little role, their little task.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last time period where I think everybody felt like they had that in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You did your thing. It was before the layoffs happened, the 70s, the layoffs in the 70s and stuff get overseas. You worked at the plant, and that plant made something that was a big deal for most people in the United States somewhere.
Right. It didn't matter if it was toilet bowl covers, you know, like the little rugs.
Your town was the toilet bowl cover.
We had the best toilet bowl covers there were.
Right.
Right?
We were Poughkeepsie was known for X, or no, Poughkeepsie wasn't known for anything, but you know what I mean. Yeah. Buffalo did this. Cleveland did that. St. Louis did this. Sioux City did that. You did this thing. And your part of the country manufactured something that was shipped to other parts of the country and that was in turn imported stuff from other parts of the country. And we kind of chugged along that way. Everything then starts going overseas, 70s and the 80s. And I don't think I appreciated this until I got older and older. That all broke down.
We're consumers.
We're consumers.
Not so much producers. Right.
We're not, but you're known for what you consume, not what you do.
Right.
Right? It's, no, I mean, that's the whole premise behind the whole gig economy, right? It doesn't even matter what you do. It's what you post on Instagram. Where'd you go? You went there, you went here, you went X, you went Y, you went Z. The driving thing that people held against the 50s and 60s, the keeping up with the Joneses, has not gone away. Has only intensified, like you wouldn't believe.
It's even only intensified more because of social media. It's like
social media is it's a central premise, right?
Yeah,
behind the Joneses, keep up the Joneses. Central.
The Joneses are going to Disney next week.
They're going to Disney in China.
Right.
And their kids already speak Chinese.
We're in France.
Yeah. Or the one in France, right? And they speak French and Chinese. What about your kids?
All the Disney princesses are coming over to their Airbnb for an after party, okay?
Right. The real ones. Yeah. Not the fake local ones, the real Disney princesses. The ones that work at the park. You're too cool to play.
Right. Right. What are you doing?
Right. My kids been to Disney every year they've been alive. That's what I'm saying. I mean, this is my kids, but I've never been to Disney with my kids. But yeah, so again, what is held against, or what I've always heard held against the 50s and 60s, that there was this shallow culture, keeping up the Joneses, has only intensified more and more.
What do you
and
see?
The saving grace is, go ahead.
Did you see the Super Bowl commercial? We're keeping up with the Joneses Super Bowl commercial?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And they're Tommy Lee, Leslie Jones.
Rashida Jones.
And Nick Jonas.
Yes.
And Tommy Lee didn't know who Nick Jonas was, right?
Right.
Whoever you are. But yeah, so yeah, we hold against them that they kept up with the Joneses, but we only do that more and more. And we're jealous of them for having what we never had, which is a sense of like placing community. And people talk about found community and whatever, but what is that? Just internet groups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it can be more than that, but I mean, it's not most people. Most people are not that socially tied in. And even if they are, it's, I think, in a very Facebook kind of way. They hit like on your posts. You hit like on their posts.
Yeah.
You say, that's a great picture of you going at this such and such a place.
You look good.
Right. Yeah, now, where'd you stay? Where's your Airbnb? That's what that's about. Oh, I know the person who owns that place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so a lot of that. And that's my point. I think that can lead to a lot of emptiness. I think it can lead to very shallow culture.
It does. And it's a competition. You can't win. There's always going to be somebody that makes more than you or has a more exciting life than you.
Or looks better, right?
Or absolutely looks better. Right.
Right. Like the shot that they take at Jeff Bezos now that he's divorced. He's trying to look younger. I mean, he can't be. Sorry, you can't have it all.
But his new girlfriend, you know, she seems to be okay with that.
Yeah, right. But you know she's in it for the money.
She's very attractive. I saw pictures of her. It's like, wow, okay, well now.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably one thing I'll never have to worry about. You know, somebody just loving me for my money and wealth. You know?
See? Right. We're with the ones that love us for who we are.
Right. Yes.
Because, you know, I'd invariably blow it anyway. You know, there'd be something better on the generals. They were due. Sorry, honey. I'd lose it. No, I wouldn't. But anyway. But yeah, it's just, Yeah, no, that's society is just, I worry about it. And I worry about, like, the, like, I don't get to make an impression as much as I'd hope to with the youth that are growing up in my house. Like, go outside, play in the yard, make friends in the neighborhood, you know.
That's not how it's done this way.
Get off the internet, you know. It's just, yep. I'm so backwards, you know.
My kids will play outside with neighbors. I really like that. I kind of like that I'm on one of the few saving graces where I'm not. I don't have a lot of saving graces where I'm at, but it's not one of the newer homes. It's an older place, but we're on a decent amount of land. Anytime they can go play outside, and if the neighbors out, they can play with them, and they get a good track of land to run around on. I'm very happy about that. I think a lot of, you know, and, you know, along the lines of what I was saying earlier, a lot of what we do with, like, sports and playing is very much around expensive leagues that you have to be a part of, which I think is crap. I hear people paying outrageous amount of money to go play soccer, which, to me, the main thing about that's great about soccer is you're getting some exercise.
Yeah, I mean, I took the 10-year-old to see the Monster Truck Jam, and you know, we're at the Monster Truck Jam. She's like, "Can we go to a park after this?" Like,
oh, that's awesome. What?
We're at. Can we talk about it after the Monster Truck Jam? Because we're at the Monster Truck Jam right
Never
now.
Enough, Ed. Never enough.
But can we go to the park? Well, it is 30 degrees outside, okay? But, you know, it's not too bad. Like, okay, we're still at the Monster Truck Jam. Let's do this first, okay?
After the trucks got crushed, or the cars got crushed, did she get into it?
Oh, no. She was into it. She was just angling for the next thing, you know?
Yeah, I get you. My daughter's psyched to go to a NASCAR event. Psyched. Can't wait to get to her first NASCAR event. Can't wait.
NASCAR?
NASCAR.
Oh, that'd be cool.
NASCAR, not IMSA, not Formula One, not Indy. NASCAR.
Oh, yeah. You get the scanners?
Yeah, she's psyched for that. Psyched.
That's awesome.
I'm kind of bummed because I've always wanted to go to IMSA race. She's not into IMSA. All the IMSA fans hate the brother who runs the NASCAR.
She saw
a NASCAR race, and then we watched. I don't know which one it was. I have to look it up. It was towards the end of the Sprint Cup last year, and one and two were angling it out. I think they might have, like, caused a crash, and the third place guy won right at the last second.
Mm-hmm.
And she just laughed and laughed. She thought that was the best thing. She just, like, cackled out loud. She just said, as third place raced past from one and two. They were so focused on one another. Just the fact that they tried everything and they lost. She loved it. Loved it.
And
I told her about trading paint, and she loves that idea.
Nice.
You know, in Formula One, they've got very formal passing rules, and a NASCAR still crash.
Right.
She loves it. Yeah, you get a warning flag if you bump them too hard, but I mean, still bump them too hard. yeah, and one of the races, one guy came out swinging somebody else. She thought that was cool. Mm. Like, it was that rough and tumble. So, yeah, she can't wait to see NASCAR. So we'll go up to Delaware at some point. Or Richmond. Although she was excited about Talladega, she likes the name.
She likes the name?
Yeah. Talladega is a pretty cool name. I heard it's
great. That is a great name.
I heard it's a very cool track. I haven't been there.
It's a historic track. I'm much more of a, you know, Formula One Grand Prix kind of person, so even Indy car.
There, I don't think they've done it in a while, but they had a formula race downtown in Baltimore. And it was the idea was to have it on an ongoing basis. And it was it was on the circuit. So it was a real race. It wasn't like a downtown or anything like that. So, the closest place we could probably see a race would be Formula One downtown. She's no interest. Put her on for her. I think she likes the danger behind NASCAR. Not that they're all that dangerous, but we'll put it more directly. I think she likes the recklessness of NASCAR.
Dang.
Oh, yeah, with the permitted bumping and everything. Whereas, yeah, like you said, the real cars are not more careful about that.
Well, I mean, if you bump something in Formula One, you might be your team might get pulled, right?
Yeah.
If you don't follow the flags, right? Because don't you have to? Because you have to get flagged to pass, right?
I don't recall that.
The thing is, the turns are so tight. If you're trying to pull like NASCAR rules, that you're going to flip 9 cars.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Like you can't. You just can't. At the speeds they're going with the design of those cars, you can't have wreck fast and loose because they're driving so much faster. Indy cars the same way. Like you can't be reckless in cars doing as fast as they're going. And that level of racing has to be super precise. And it's really cool, especially if it's raining. Formula One's really cool rain. Because they're just pushing it just to the edge. And they're driving in dangerous track conditions and things like that. So it can be very exciting. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more refined and much faster. Do you watch IndyCar too or just Formula One?
I watch a lot of those motorsports when I don't look for them, but if it's a Saturday afternoon and it's on, I watch it. I don't typically watch NASCAR, but I do prefer Indy or F1 or some of those, like you said, like IMSA and stuff. I love it when they mix the different classes in there. So you see a Porsche 911 looking thing.
Yeah, right.
A couple other things. And it's like, that's so cool.
Those 24-hour ones are super cool for that.
Oh yeah,
I think HD TV and the bigger screens. You know, I'm sure I know they help out all the sports, but I mean, I think they really help
racing out the most for sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Because you can't when we were watching it as kids, it was dull.
Yeah,
but yeah, right. You watch that on a widescreen in 1080, man, it is pretty exciting. I think it's pretty exciting.
Yeah,
I had a good.
No, and plus they have the graphics that they can put on the screen and.
So you understand the standings and.
Yeah, right.
When the positions are constantly changing.
Yeah.
And what that means and how much time people lose in the pit and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, that adds a lot more excitement to it.
Yeah, it does.
Or they'll superimpose the racetrack and you can see where the cars are or where the.
Oh yeah, right. Like Mario Kart-esque.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
I think that's pretty cool, but like NASCAR is kind of boring because like oval track. So, okay, there's somewhere on the oval.
Right. Well, that's why I think so. IMSA is like the perfect mix for me because they got cooler track shapes. They're very fast, but they still have a little more lax rule set than the Formula One and Indy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're just a lot of fun. There was a super rainstorm for this one IMSA race I was watching. And it was like a flood. And there's these southern announcers. And like cars are high. It was like, it was a mess. And it was just like a wall of water. And this guy's, this southern accent is like, yeah, the racetrack conditions, what we call damp today. It's really <cool. laughs> just that understated southern sense of humor. They call it damp. you're seeing water just pouring down the side like a waterfall. Yeah, it was really funny. I had a coworker who was a huge F1 fan, huge Formula One fan, went to see he saw some of the big races like overseas, like in Europe, he's seen races. We have a new guy come in who's on our team and he just made some sort of offhand comment about Lamborghinis. I said, hey, why don't you go tell Jose what do you think about Lamborghinis versus Porsche? And he did. There's just some, Porsche suck, Lamborghinis are better, or something like that. He says it to, like, a monster Porsche head, amongst other things.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into the history of Porsche beating, like, Lamborghini, like, in races and like that. And he's just been watching, like, the sport for 40 years. To have this youngster tell him Lamborghinis, Porsche suck was just really funny. It was a Gen Z versus an elder Gen X, and it was funny to see.
Lamborghini doesn't have much of a racing heritage.
Not like Porsche. Not like Porsche does.
No.
Not like Porsche or Ferrari.
Ferrari.
You know, Lamborghini. Well,
first Ferrari was like, yeah, right, huge.
They're the exotic car, right?
That's kind of what it's known for, yeah.
Yeah. They're known for the really angular, exotic cars is what they're known for. They don't have a racing heritage, not like a Porsche or a Lamborghini, or excuse me, Ferrari, or even a Maserati, or Lotus.
They're your show car that you really can't drive anywhere, and you really wouldn't want to. I don't think you really want to trust them if you really needed them. That's just my take on it.
I would have to agree. If you read any of the reviews and long-term drivers like Edmunds.com used to like have long-term cars that they would drive, it's like, okay, the Ferraris and Lamborghini, you know, those hyper-exotic cars are never reliable. Whereas a Porsche, they're reliable, you know, and it's like, okay, you drive your Lamborghini, where do you think you're going to go with it? And you trust leaving it there in a parking lot, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at Lamborghini as a Formula One engine manufacturer. Constructors' championships, zero. Drivers' championships, zero. Race victories, zero. Podiums, one. Points, 20. This is like career-long stats. In contrast to his rival, Enzo Ferrari, Ferruccio Lamborghini, they decided early on there'd be no factory-supported racing of Lamborghinis, and he viewed motorsports as too expensive. Mm-hmm. They don't have the history.
No,
these other ones do. I think they're like compete these days, but let me see. No. For complete Formula One results, it goes from 89 to 93. So yeah, I don't know if they're on the road these days for. Just sales. Yeah, it's a quote unquote sports car, right?
Oh yeah,
but it's not a racer.
You have. You have too much money that the Corvette won't do.
Right. You have to look better than that D-bag down the hall who just bought a Corvette. You got to show him up at the wherever. At the
Winners Club.
So you need something cooler than that. Hence Lamborghini.
Right.
Well, then people think it looks cooler, so it must be faster.
Absolutely. That's right. You look at it, even when it's not moving, the Lambo looks like it's going like Mach 5, you know?
Right.
But of course, the new Corvette, the new generation, the C8 Corvettes look just as nice. I mean, now that it's a mid-engine car, they're going to change the lines a lot.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy a Lamborghini and have a Corvette. The new Corvettes look slick.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. And then you can go to the factory and turn it on. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
When you buy your Corvette, you can reserve the right to flip it over the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when it comes off the line.
That's, and I don't know why they didn't go mid-engine long ago. I mean, that just makes for a better, you know, sports car altogether.
Right. The driving dynamics are much better on a mid-engine car. I really don't know. And what I also like about the new Corvettes, the back end, because on the older, let's say C4, C5 models, it just looks like they ran out of money and just chopped the back end of the car straight down.
And it
was just boring as all get out to look at it. It was ugly even because it's like, okay, it almost goes straight down, you know? Okay, slight curvature, but not much, you know? And it's like, for all the effort that you put to the front and the side and the And it's like, the back is ugly. Almost looks like a pickup truck tailgate, right? I mean, it's just flat sheet of metal with a couple round lights. That's it. It's like, okay, boring.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, if you're a Corvette owner, that's what you want everyone to see, right? You know, being passed.
Right.
That's what you're going to see. The last thing you see is their taillights, right? Getting away from you.
Man, I'm looking at the 2022 Stingray, man, that's a good-looking car.
Oh, the Stingray. Oh, my goodness, yes. Yeah, and it's a nice car. I mean, for the money, you get a lot of car. You can't touch a Lamborghini for, like, twice as much. You know, you
probably the coupe they're putting in at 63.
Right, but you can't touch a Lamborghini for $125.
No, right, you're doubling that. Yeah. And then you have to find, like, that and all that.
Maybe, right.
Maybe my Facebook persona needs to have a Corvette.
That's a nice looking car. I'll tell you what, they're talking about feeling empty. I wouldn't feel so empty if I was a gas tank might be empty, but boy.
Yeah.
I'd get over it.
I'd feel pretty good about it. Man, that's one nice looking car. It still comes in that stick, right?
Oh,
the Ford GT, yeah.
Yeah.
That's not a nice one. I looked that one up before. I saw one of those on the road the other day.
Mm-hmm. My friend has one. It is quite nice. Very, very nice.
You know, I was kind of let down. I saw the commercials for those new, the Broncos.
Oh, yeah, I don't like them.
But then I saw one, and I'm like, oh, that's what
it is. Look different life.
they're too small. Just, they're not.
Yeah. They look small. Yes.
Yeah. They're not.
Like, slightly larger than a Kia Soul is the
they're going for the Jeep market with that, right?
Oh, could be. Like, the Jeep Compass. Yeah.
But, they're too small. I don't know why they. I mean, like, they. To me, they purposely made them look bigger in the commercials. Like, you know, like, as in Croc Dundee was driving around his Subaru Outback, you know, and tried to. Try to say that it bested every, SUV on the road when all he was really driving around was an all-wheel drive station wagon.
Right. It's a fine all-wheel drive station wagon.
Sure, it is. But it's not.
It's fine for what it is. It's not a truck.
Right.
Like, it's just no way. They were kind of, like, presenting it almost like it's a Ford F-150 or something.
Right.
And it just is no way that. It's not even like a Land Rover.
No, I'd take a Land Rover. Very capable.
Oh yeah, well I mean the power on the Land Rover is much, much greater than the Outback, right?
Oh yeah.
And even more than a Jeep, right? I thought it was stronger than a Jeep.
I have a Land Rover, actually. I got a used one.
Do you take it off road? Do you go off road?
I tell you what, I had to drive through the snow up and down the streets of Oakland. And icy.
If that ain't off road, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and it's got some really cool features that help you live. I gotta say, it's got some really cool packages that keep you alive, yeah, and safe. So
alive and safer, all good.
Well, a couple weekends ago, when it was super snow covered here in Pittsburgh, I took my daughter, who's only 13, but I've been kind of narrating things to do when you're driving in, et cetera, up to the industrial park and, proceeded to show her how to pull out a skids. I'd put the car intentionally into a skid and all sorts of other things. And, you know, she was like, oh, okay. You know, and just kind of taking some notes. And I told her, you know, when it's her time to drive, we will be revisiting this, except she will be behind the wheel.
Yep. Teaching the boy to drive. He's getting his license, and he was driving it around. So it's interesting. Like he's a video gamer, right? And if you imagine the Wii wheel for the Nintendo games, like you have the steering wheel where you turn it 90 degrees either direction, and you're going left or right. You know. Well, he was very perplexed when he got in the car, and he's like, you know, you have to turn the wheel more. Like, he's like, it goes around and like around.
Yes, it does.
How many times does it go around? I have no idea. I don't really know. I probably
usually 2.5 to 5.
I think I can do like 4 total rotations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I have no idea. But guess what? it doesn't really matter because in your mind, it'll just all go in your mind. You'll figure it out.
It goes as many as it needs to go.
Right. Exactly.
That's how many.
He's like, goes. Well, that's dumb. I'm like, well, you think it's dumb, except for driving.
Oh, you got a new way to design a car steering, do you?
Yeah. When you're driving at 25 miles an hour, the steering required is a lot different than when you're driving, say, 75 miles an hour.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you turn a little too much, if your wheel was so responsive, everyone would be crashing their cars going over a certain speed. It'd be so dangerous.
Exactly.
Right. So, you're going to want to take that back.
Yeah.
So.
Simmer down there, X-Wing.
That's right.
But anyway.
Does he play Mario Kart? I should ask this. Does he play in the racing games where they use a wheel?
Yeah, he does. But it's all 90 degrees, you know. The maximum's 90, you know.
Yeah, ways. they don't have like four rotations.
They don't have hand over hand, you know.
Yeah, right.
So.
Well, in NASCAR they do hand over hand. Not, certainly not like Oman.
No. Right. No, I'm saying with the
giving. NASCAR stock car racing, right?
So sure.
Nominally, it's supposed to be a car you just got out of the shop. Of course it is. And no one cheats. That's the other thing I told my daughter about. She's obsessed with scams and like cheating for some reason. I said, yeah, and she thought that was hysterical. That normally you're supposed to be able to drive it off a lot and you show up there. And that's probably not true. Everybody's trying to get around that. She thought that was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that there's a rule set that everyone's trying to break, she thought was the funniest thing.
Mm-hmm. What can they get away with?
And I told her that rule set is what we call all life. NASCAR is the small thing, and everyone's trying to break rules everywhere. That's why we have people that try to prevent people from doing that.
Yep.
So, well, yeah, she was watching a Dr. Phil about vacation scams the other day. I thought that was funny.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, we are out of time again. Very fast. We did let Jeff talk a little more. I appreciate that. Again, sorry, Jeff. You just have to shut us off, really.
You do. No, you guys were on a roll, and it was interesting what you had to say. And it's like, back to the matter of us, it's like, okay, I don't have much to say about this because I haven't thought about it. So hard to provide input when, you know.
Next week, more about cars. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, have a good night, everyone. Thanks. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so obvious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. You've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time across the dimension.